Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, The Story of King Vena, text number 44, and I'll go through to the end of the chapter, which is text 46. Kaka Krishna,
Kaka Krishna,
Adihasva,
Adihasva,
Anga,
Anga,
Rasva,
Rasva,
Bahu,
Bahu,
Maha,
Maha,
Hanu,
Hanu,
Rasa,
Rasva,
Pat,
Pat,
Nimna,
Nimna,
Nasagra,
Nasagra,
Ratta,
Ratta,
Aksha,
Aksha,
Tamra,
Tamra,
Murtaja,
Murtaja,
Kaka Krishna Tiras Rangango, Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Panim Nodna Sago,
Rasva Panim Nodna Sago,
Rataksas Tamra Mudhaja,
Rataksas Tamra Mudhaja,
Kaka Krishna Tiha Svango,
Kaka Krishna Tiha Svango,
Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Panina Nasaga Kro,
Rasva Panina Nasaga Kro,
Raktakshas Tamra Mudhaja,
Raktakshas Tamra Mudhaja,
Kaka Krishna Tiha Svango,
Kaka Krishna Tiha Svango,
Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Bahu Mahanu,
Rasva Panino Nasagro,
Rasva Panino Nasagro,
Raktakshas Tamra Mudhaja,
Raktakshas Tamra Mudhaja,
Kaka Krishna,
Kaka Krishna,
as black as a crow,
as black as a crow,
Ati Rasva,
Ati Rasva,
very short,
very short,
Anga,
Anga,
his limbs,
his limbs,
Rasva,
Rasva,
short,
short,
Bahu,
Bahu,
his arms,
his arms,
Maha,
Maha,
big,
big,
Hanu,
Hanu,
his jaws,
his jaws,
Rasva,
Rasva,
short,
short,
Pat,
Pat,
his legs,
his legs,
Nimna,
Nimna,
flat,
flat,
Nasagra,
Nasagra,
the tip of his nose,
the tip of his nose,
Rakta,
Rakta,
reddish,
reddish,
Aksha,
Aksha,
his eyes,
his eyes,
Tamra,
Tamra,
copper-like,
copper-like,
Murtaja,
Murtaja,
his hair,
his hair.
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. No purport. This person, born from King Vena's thighs, was named Bahuka, and his complexion was as black as a crow's. All the limbs of his body were very short, his arms and legs were short, and his jaws were large. His nose was flat, his eyes were reddish, and his hair copper-coloured. Translation responsibly. This person born from King Vena's thighs,
this person born from Vena's thighs,
was named Bahuka.
Was named Bahuka.
And his complexion was as black as a crow's.
And his complexion was as black as a crow's.
All the limbs of his body were very short.
All the limbs of his body were very short.
His arms and legs were short.
His arms and legs were short.
And his jaws were large.
And his jaws were large.
His nose was flat.
His nose was flat.
His eyes were reddish.
His eyes were reddish.
And his hair copper coloured.
And his hair copper coloured.
So read text 45 and 46 as well, because they're pretty much connected. Text 45. Tam tu te pranatam dinam kim karomi ti vadinam ise jeda chabruvam stata sanishadas tato bhavat. He was very submissive and meek, and immediately after his birth, he bowed down and inquired, "Sirs, what shall I do?" The great sages replied, "Please sit down, Nishida." Thus Nishada, the father of the Nishada race, was born. Purport. It is said in the Shastras that the head of the body represents the Brahmins, the arms represent the Kshatriyas, the abdomen represents the Vaishyas, and the legs, beginning with the thighs, represent the Shudras. The Shudras are sometimes called black or Krishna. The Brahmins are called Shukla or white, and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas are a mixture of black and white. However, those who are extraordinarily white are said to have skin produced out of white leprosy. It may be concluded that white or a golden hue is the colour of the high caste and black is the complexion of the Shukras. Text 46. Tasya vamshas tu naishara girikanana gotra yenaharais jaya yatmano venakamasham ubanam. After his Nishada's birth, he immediately took charge of all the resulting actions of King Vena's sinful activities. As such, this Nishada class are always engaged in sinful activities like stealing, plundering, and hunting. Consequently, they are only allowed to live in the hills and forests. Purport. The Nishadas are not allowed to live in cities and towns because they are sinful by nature. As such, their bodies are very ugly, and their occupations are also sinful. We should, however, know that even these sinful men, who are sometimes called Karatas, can be delivered from their sinful condition to the topmost Vaishnava platform by the mercy of a pure devotee. Engagement in the transcendental loving devotional service of the Lord can make anyone, however sinful he may be, fit to return home back to Godhead. One has only to become free from all contamination by the process of devotional service. In this way, everyone can become fit to return home back to Godhead. This is confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:32. Mamhi pata vipa shuja yevi siu papayonia striyo vaishas tata shudras te piyanti pramgatim. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter of me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, merchants, as well as shudras, workers, can approach the supreme destination. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Story of King Vena. Amigyanantimirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kiravayam dadati svaparantikam vandeham shri guru shri yukta parikamalam shri guru vaishnamascha shri rupam sarajatam sahakara bhagnatam mitam tam sajivam sabetam sabadutam krishna sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padam sahakana lalita shivita kantam sa he krishna kuna sindhu dina bandhu jagapate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namaste tapta kanchana gaurandi radhe vrindavane shri krishna namaste devi pranamami hari priye pancha kalpa dhruvyascha kripa sindhu vyayita Patitanam bhavneyo vaishnavyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasai Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Bhaktivedanta Nirvishesha Srinivasa Prasadaya Shatana. So we come to the end of the story of King Vena, and we'll basically continue to the next chapter, continuation in the next chapter. And the sages, by their mystic potency, killed King Vena. It was a tricky situation for them. They had, if they, without King Vena, then as we see now, the rogues and the thieves flourish. But with King Vena, then the sacrifice, Brahminical sacrifices are stopped, and people, you know, get into irregular habits, as is the situation of today's society. So, but because King Vena had insulted the sages and the personality of Godhead, then the sages decided he was condemned at that stage when he blasphemed sages and Krishna. So now they have to, now the rogues and thieves are flourishing, so they have to rectify that also. So their solution is to, they still want the semen coming from the line of King Vena, because he was in the line of Maharaj Dhruva. So that was the reason that they, his body was kept by his wife. So they're going to use that body to make a new...
By his mom.
Oh, sorry, his mom. Yeah, not his wife. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the first result of the churning of King Vena was Bahuka. And is a crow called Kaka in Hindi?
Tamil.
Okay. So maybe this is because crows don't make that sound, right? Kaha, kaha. Maybe that's how they heard the word. So this this is not a popular subject, you could call it, like, the science of understanding a person's character from their bodily features. And this is this has been dismissed in the modern day as a science. So we have in Australia basically what's being described, the Naishadha race or hunter class, and or Aboriginal class, which exist in different parts of the world, in Australia as well. So it's where among devotees, if you're among non-devotees, then you probably wouldn't, not the first thing you talk about. These people are just, everything has to be equal. It's all democracy, and everyone's the same, everyone has the same abilities, and that's the theory of the modern day. But that only applies on the spiritual platform. Well, we see materially there are differences, so some of these differences are described amongst the races, that the Naishadhas have had a flat nose. We see Aborigines, they have a flat nose, and blackish skin, and some races have a large jaw. And then generally, like, they're hunters, so they live in the forest. And even though Prabhupada says in his purport that the Naishadhas are not allowed to live in the cities and towns because they're sinful by nature, But we see that even so-called civilized people have become that sinful and just making use of the built these cities to further their sinful activities. You know, in the Vedic time there were cities, nice cities like Mathura, and there's nice descriptions of these cities in Bhagavatam, very, you know, wide roads and scented water sprinkled on the road, and nice parks in the cities, large palatial buildings with very opulent precious stones and everything in the buildings. So there were cities in the Vedic times, but all that opulence and everything was used to worship Krishna. So the cities nowadays are very, if we think of a modern day city, it's kind of a very harsh place, very concrete jungle, and so much noise, construction going on all the time. And, you know, we just like, we love to go to the farm and get some peace. Because it's just such a intense, you know, competitive, like, rat race in the cities. So, you know, these are like material cities of geared toward sense gratification. And that's all they're about. Everyone, you know, has to work very hard, and it's Monday morning, so people are back to work, and they're not working to support their, you know, their homes are not temples. Their homes are temples for their TVs and eating anything they want. And as my Gurudev says, people are trying to come to the spontaneous platform of sense gratification. But just whatever desire comes to their mind, bang, that the service is there, available, that they can fulfill their senses. Good example might be like the food delivery services. You just, it's 2 a.m. in the morning and you want pizza, and just get on the phone and half an hour, your pizza is there. And but like my doctor said, I mentioned, this is why people get sick, because they don't know who's cooking their food, and the consciousness of the people that are cooking their food, the habits of the people that are cooking their food. It's just so that food, that whatever mixture of energies is in the food, is not recognizable, not digestible by the body. So people get sick. But it just happens to be the, I was, you know, thinking about this verse, and I'll just quickly read this, because there's mention of Nashadas, and they're also called Karatas in this verse. So the verse that talks about that is in Canto 2, the different races and classes of people who left the Vedic culture and who were formerly associated with the Brahminical culture but left it and became engaged in sinful activity. But the same, Prabhupada gives the same message in that verse, that although they're sinful, they can be delivered by the grace of a pure devotee. Just like Narada Muni, who delivered the hunter, and he was known as a Karata. And so this in chapter 4, verse 18. Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulacha Abhirish Shumba Yavana Kasadaya Yenye Chapapa Yad Apashaya Shaya Shudyanti Tam Tasmai Pravishnave Namaha. So Kirati Kuna Andra Pulinda Pulaksha Avira Shumba Yavana, members of the Kasa races, and even others addicted to sinful acts, can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, due to His being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. So there's a description with references from Mahabharata of these different races, just like the Palinda, they're known as the Greeks. So the Greeks and the people from Turkey, these people that were formerly residing in India and ran away to Europe because Parashuram was killing all the Kshatriyas. So the whole history is there in Mahabharata of all these classes and races of people and how their migration to different parts of the world. But the important part is, and Chinese also mentioned in Mahabharata, the Khalsa. So I'll just read some of that purport that similar to this verse, that all these people, Prabhupada says, the above mentioned historical names are different nations of the world. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are all corrigible to the standard of perfect human beings if they take shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Jesus Christ and Muhammad, two powerful devotees of the Lord, have done tremendous service on behalf of the Lord on the surface of the globe. And from the version of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, it appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world situation, if the leadership of world affairs is entrusted to the devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of the International Society for Christian Consciousness has already been started, then, by the grace of the Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change of heart in human beings all over the world because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to effect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. The politicians of the world may remain in their respective positions because the pure devotees of the Lord are not interested in political leadership or diplomatic implications. The devotees are interested only in seeing that the people in general are not misguided by political propaganda and in seeing that the valuable life of a human being is not spoiled in following a type of civilization which is ultimately doomed. If the politicians, therefore, would be guided by the good counsel of the devotees, then certainly there would be a great change in the world situation by the purifying propaganda of the devotees, as shown by Lord Chaitanya. As Shukadeva Goswami began his prayer by discussing the word Yat Kirtanam, so also Lord Chaitanya recommended that simply by glorifying the Lord's holy name, a tremendous change of heart can take place by which the complete misunderstanding between the human nations created by politicians can at once be extinguished. And after the extinction of the fire of misunderstanding, other prophets will follow. The destination is to go back home, back to Godhead, as we have several times discussed in these pages. I'll go to the end of this, but even though it's quite long, but relevant to today's verse. According to the cult of devotion, generally known as the Vaishnava cult, there is no bar against anyone's advancing in the matter of God realization. A Vaishnava is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnava, even the Karata and so on, as above mentioned. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, it is said by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord, even for those who are low-born or women, Shudras or Vaishyas. And by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. The only qualification is that one takes shelter of the pure devotee of the Lord who has thorough knowledge in the transcendental science of Krishna, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone from any part of the world who becomes well conversant in the science of Krishna becomes a pure devotee and a spiritual master for the general mass of people and may reclaim them by purification of heart. Though a person be even the most sinful man, he can at once be purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, therefore, can accept a bona fide disciple from any part of the world without any consideration of caste and creed, and promote him by regulative principles to the status of a pure Vaishnava who is transcendental to Brahminical culture. The system of caste, or Varna Shandan, is no longer regular, even amongst the so-called followers of the system. Nor is it possible to re-establish the institutional function in the present context of social, political, and economic revolution. Without any reference to the particular custom of a country, one can be accepted to the Vaishnava cult spiritually, and there is no hindrance in the transcendental process. So, by the order of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita can be preached all over the world, reclaiming all persons willing to accept the transcendental cult. Such cultural propaganda by the devotees will certainly be accepted by all persons who are reasonable and inquisitive, without any particular bias for the custom of the country. The Vaishnava never accepts another Vaishnava on the basis of birthright, just as he never thinks of the deity of the Lord in a temple as an idol. And to remove all doubts in this connection, Srila Shukadeva Goswami has invoked the blessings of the Lord, who is all-powerful, Prabhu Vishnavai Namaha. As the all-powerful Lord accepts the humble service of his devotee in devotional activities of the Archana, his form is the worshipful deity in the temple. Similarly, the body of a pure Vaishnava changes transcendentally at once when he gives himself up to the service of the Lord and is trained by a qualified Vaishnava. The injunction of the Vaishnava regulation in this connection runs as follows. One should not consider the deity of the Lord as worshipped in the temple to be an idol, nor should one consider the authorized spiritual master an ordinary man, nor should one consider a pure Vaishnava to belong to a pure caste, and so on, from the Padma Purana. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world, either personally or through his bona fide manifestation as the spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. That is the way of self-realization. Thank you for your attention. And yeah, so this is the point. So this gets us into the field of preaching. And because basically everyone's very engaged in simple activities, and I've been kind of around non-devotees more than I used to be. And, you see, like, it's no issue to just eat meat and take intoxication. It's like it's norm. It's a way of life. But a devotee doesn't reject anyone to say, "Oh, you're too sinful." There's no such thing as too sinful. This is what is being explained, that the pure Vaishnava, pure devotee, by their potency, by their association, can purify anyone. We have to believe that anyone's heart can be transformed. So it just happens to be the auspicious appearance day of His Holiness Devi Goswami today. So I thought that's also a nice connection to today's verse. I'm not a disciple, but he's a Siksha Guru for me. And firstly, you have to understand that when we're glorifying devotees, that these are Buddhist powerful devotees. They're like, what's the word, like pearls on Prabhupada's necklace. So sometimes devotees who are newer devotees just get a bit focused on my guru is the best and there's no one else but my guru, but the devotees don't see them like disciples of Prabhupada, they don't see themselves like that. They understand that we're just servants of Prabhupada, and that, you know, my service is to, you know, as was explained in this purport, that the people can get trained by qualified Vaishnava. So this is the position of Prabhupada's disciples and grand disciples, that we're being trained by Prabhupada to come to his standard of pure devotion. So if we keep that, you know, context in mind, it's no problem to, it's not that we don't glorify our spiritual master, but we appreciate their completely dedicated service to Prabhupada, because like when Prabhupada was here, he initiated thousands of disciples, and but over the decades then we see that not so many stuck to the process of Krishna consciousness. It's not such an easy path to follow, and so therefore someone who's not only following, sticking strictly to that process of Krishna consciousness, but also, propagating, preaching that process to others and getting others to become devotees of Krishna, that's a very wonderful feat and example. Because as we practice Krishna consciousness, Krishna will give us tests, and like Japataka Maharaj, I think he says, you know, you never give up. So, you know, we have to try to see that whatever tests that are coming our way, at the end of it, if we get through these tests, then our faith is like, you know, our attachment to Krishna is stronger. And if we can kind of just, you know, stay in the association of devotees and kind of grit our teeth and see that this purification, it's not like a punishment from Krishna. It's actually, he's doing it for our benefit. Yeah, because our own past activities, that we have to go through some purification, and Krishna doesn't want us to just be comfortable in the material world. And as I think Brujangaru, he says, you know, we're aiming for Goloka Vrindavan, we're aiming for the highest spiritual planet in Vaikuntha. So if you have such a high goal, such a lofty goal, then there has to be very intense purification to make you qualified for that goal. We should appreciate devotees who are continuing the process even in spite of difficulties, and so with His Holiness Dev Rita Maharaj, I very much owe my beginnings of Krishna consciousness to him, because he is a very innovative preacher. He was mentioning in a recent class when he was here, that we have book distribution, and then in conjunction to complement book distribution, we have we make arrangements to give people continued association with devotees. So that they meet a devotee on the street, and that initial contact is very good, they hopefully a few people, they become enlivened by that initial contact. Then we have to give them further opportunities to associate with devotees. And, you know, temples are one such place for association, and but it's maybe not suitable for, at least in the beginning, not the right place for everyone to come and associate with devotees. So David Reed Maharaj set up many yoga centers, preaching centers in the cities, and we have urban yoga in the city, and that's where I had an association with devotees, and you know, I had kirtan every week and prasadam, and I remember paneer sabji. I was like, wow, is this tofu? And like, no, it's like a cheese. So that kind of, you know, I think, like, unfortunately, maybe many devotees in our congregation might not even know about urban yoga. So these kind of centers need to be encouraged and supported. And then I guess David Reed Maharaj is very has unique that he preaches to Indians and he preaches to Westerners, so he has many disciples in both categories. Of course, the devotee doesn't have that vision. They don't see someone as Indian, someone as Westerner. Just from a material perspective, it might be relevant to know that in terms of how you're going to preach to people, what's going to be their obstacles in devotional service. And so Maharaj does a lot of preaching at Melbourne Uni as well, and I think he told, you know, the devotees, he told Gopi Vrindesh and so on, that when you're preaching at Melbourne Uni, you're preaching to the world, because there's students from all over the world at Melbourne Uni, and Melbourne in general, there's thousands and thousands of students from Asia, China, Korea, everywhere, all these, and India as well, and many, many countries. So when we're, you know, that's a good access point to reach out to different nations, people. And of course, Maharaj is based in New Zealand, so seeing New Zealand that, you know, Indians have like migrated to lots of parts of the world, like Canada, and like the Western countries, Canada, UK, and also there's a lot of Indians in New Zealand as far as I know. But if you go to New Zealand, there's a much larger proportion of Western devotees, just local backpackers and from different parts of the world, Europe, and so this is a feature of Maharaj's preaching, that is reaches out to the local population. So it's something that we can learn from Maharaj and try to implement more so ourselves in our community. Everyone knows how Maharaj is such a special talent for orating, giving talks basically. Everyone looks forward to his classes, and he's got this powerful presence, and a very, you know, very deep, hearty laugh, and he's very expert at, you know, because we're presenting Krishna consciousness according to the Acharya's message. We're repeating the Acharya's message, but we're not repeating parrot-like. We're not just, you know, repeating word for word whatever Prabhupada said in his books. Like, I remember once I saw a talk by a disciple of Maharaj, and in one way, to his credit, that he imbibed the mood and everything of Maharaj, but there's none of his personality, there's no individuality in that particular disciple. So I thought, oh, that's a bit, we're not impersonalists, we accept that everyone's an individual, so it's not necessary that, you know, following in the footsteps of our spiritual master doesn't mean we copy their mannerisms and everything exactly. Just like Prabhupada's guru, their preaching styles were different, but they were still very effective in their preaching. So when we preach according to our own realization. We present Prabhupada's message and the Acharya's message according to our own realization. You know, we practice Krishna consciousness, and Krishna inspires us. We have our individual nature. So, you know, we preach according to what our inspiration is. Still according to the Acharya's message, but with our individual touch. So Maharaj, he's very good at that, coming up with interesting ways to present Krishna consciousness. And he has this, some of you might know his kind of slogan, one of them is like, when describing modern civilization, he describes how it's work, buy, consume, and die. So this is one thing, one of his unique things that he has. People just working every day, more than 9 to 5, maybe 8 to 6 nowadays. It's not 9 to 5 anymore, it's 8 to 6. And then, with all that money that they accumulate, they just spend it all on huge TVs and cars and food. And so then they're buying so many things and consuming all these things. And then what is the point of that life, that kind of life? You just die with no value. If someone lives like that, they make no progress whatsoever. But that's people's idea, that there is nothing more than this life. There is nothing more than living just for the enjoyment of it. But they don't realize that in that process of trying to enjoy life, it's such a struggle. And so then they live, as Prabhupada says, they live like animals and they die like animals. And then, of course, their next birth is not going to be human. So therefore, the devotees, such as Maharaj, they reach out and try to point this out to people and get them to see for themselves that life is actually just a struggle. And, Maharaj is also good at that. We don't necessarily have to just tell people straight out, like hit them over the head with the Gita, but get people to question and, reflect on their own life. And are they happy how they're living? So like this. On today, Maharaj's Vyasapuja Day, we seek his blessings for continuing Prabhupada's mission of reclaiming sinful people, souls engaged in sinful activity. We can look at our own life. If you're from India, you have a better chance of having a good upbringing. But I was atheist most of my life, and just you know, Australians love their barbecues, and but you know, if someone's fortunate, then they kind of question, like, what's life about? So even, you know, when I was did some studies recently, and we don't have to take it so seriously when people are engaged in sinful activity. So okay, that's their conditioning, that's their upbringing, that's all they've known their whole life. So we don't have to, you know, we've got to still have compassion for people. That it is possible for people's hearts to be changed. And that's also the beauty of Harinam. And if people, because if you talk to people, it's very hard to convince people, like, until you kind of make friends and establish a deeper relationship, then people are not going to listen to you. It's just their, you know, two false egos kind of clashing. And there's a very rare person that's going to listen to anything you say, and no matter how logical and reasonable you are, in, you know, which is, you know, the arguments that the acharyas present, that just our body is changing, for example, from boyhood to youth to old age. But very few people are going to give you the time to listen. And but if you, you know, Harinam kind of steps over that, bypasses that, because you go out and the people, you know, they just start dancing with you. We had a big Harinam in Geelong on Saturday night for the White Night kind of festival. And of course, like, we're the biggest thing there. Like, it's this kind of strange festival that there's all these different light exhibitions and, like, light projections on the buildings. Like, there's no activity to actually get involved in. And so people are just kind of walking around the streets bored. And then it's very exciting when they see devotees, and if they join in. Like, it's very irresistible. When people see for some people it's just irresistible when they see Harinam, and because people love to dance, you know, and you see them kind of pulling away from their partner, like, no, let me join in, even though they, it's like, what are you doing? And even I saw one little girl, and her mother joined in, like, walking alongside the devotees as we were walking up the street. And her daughter's kind of like looking at her mum, like, what is my mum doing with these strange people dancing? And but she was by herself, so she couldn't actually leave her mum. She had to go with mum. So she, at first, she didn't go with her mum, but then she's like, I can't just stay by myself. So she ran back to her mum. And she just, you know, you could see her looking like, what is my mum doing? And, but yeah, even a mother will leave her daughter to join the Harinam. And then, you know, so many instances like that, and kids will join in, and, you know, lady will leave her boyfriend to come and join in, and then friends, kind of friends will break off from their group to join in, and the friends are like, what are you doing? It's just, you know, people get drawn in. So it's such a nice thing. And if you haven't seen that on Harinam, it's really, you have to experience it. Like, it's when you see the power of Lord Chaitanya's movement in the Sankirtan. So, and then, you know, it's so easy to distribute books when people are standing around watching, and So this is, you know, they just immediately get a taste for the Lord Chaitanya's movement. And Devanath is really good. He makes sure that, you know, you can get a bit excited, and it becomes all just about the dancing and the craziness. So he makes sure he kind of slows it down and says, okay, everybody, and Hare, Hare, gets everyone to actually chant. Because some people, they'll just join in dancing and they're not actually chanting. So that, we don't want that, we want people to chant and dance. And so like that, you know, it's a very powerful way for bypassing people's, you know, conceptions of what is Hare Krishna, what is spirituality, just immediately throw them in the chant. And, yeah, so we need to have the blessings of people like Devi Goswami to, we're just assistants, you know, like he's an assistant to Srila Prabhupada, and we assist our spiritual master to assist Srila Prabhupada. And so this is a nice day to get his blessings, and some of his disciples take them the day off work and honour the spiritual master. So I'll leave it there, and tomorrow we're starting chapter 15. See if there's any comments or questions. I think I saw you first, I don't know. Yeah.
In this storyline, now the Brahmanas are churning the ties first,
mm-hmm.
and the next they are going to churn the halves.
Mm-hmm.
So, since we already know that they are looking for a Kshatriya, another king,
mm-hmm.
they should have directly gone and churned the halves first rather than the ties. I wonder why they churned the ties first.
Yeah, so, comment or question is that today the sages churned the thighs of King Vayana, and the thighs are representing the Shudras. So why didn't they just immediately churn the arms of King Vayana? Because the arms are representing the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas, they wanted a Kshatriya to replace King Vayana. They wanted a powerful king to take up the role of administration. So why was that? And I guess the answer comes in the last verse of the chapter, that this Bhakta, he immediately took charge of all the resulting actions of King Vayana's sinful activities. So, you know, the because the semen of Maharaj Anga was a bit contaminated by his wife, who was the son of Yamaraj, and so therefore there was a King Vayana was produced who was a sinful person. So I guess just from this verse we can see that sinful contamination had to be first removed before a pious king could be produced. So the, you know, Bahuga, the Nishadas, they've taken charge of all King Vayana's sinful activities. So now, now they can produce a king who's not sinful. If they immediately, if they hadn't got rid of the sinful activities, they might have produced a king who was again sinful, had the same problem. Yeah. At least I'm just taking that from the verse. And
it's confirmed in the next chapter.
Okay, so yeah, maybe we'll have further explanation of that in the next chapter. So, did you have a question, Mataji?
Just a comment. When you was mentioned Nishadas, I remember that Ekalavya, you know, when the Pandavas on earth, Ekalavya was from the Nishada race,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to, and he asked Drona to be his teacher. But Drona rejected him, so he took the image of Drona. And he worshipped him in the forest, and he became so proficient in archery.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Arjuna went and he saw that he was worshipping Drona, he went back and he was so good, he was almost probably as good as Arjuna. So Arjuna went back to Drona and asked him, why you have accepted him as a teacher?
Uh-huh.
You know, he's really good. And then Drona went back to the forest and he saw and he saw that he was worshipping him and that he was very good. And he asked me, so you have accepted me as a teacher? He said, yes. And so you have to give me dakshina. And he asked him for a thumb, to cut his thumb and give him the thumb. So in this way he disabled him from further cutting, because he considered that he didn't have the moral and inner qualities of the kshatriya, which they need to have. If you want to be a kshatriya, you need to have like noble qualities like Arjuna, you know, protection and this. And now it's more clear. It wasn't clear to me before who are these nishadas, but now it's connection with Bhaktuka and King Vena.
Okay.
So Ekalavya is descendant of this race.
Yeah, the whole history is there in Mahabharata. Any other comments or questions? Yes,
well, you mentioned that don't bring the new devotees to the temple so early in the state. Is there any reason?
It depends. Like, after a couple of weeks I came to the temple and I asked the question of another devotee, because I was just like, oh, I think it was a Sunday, so it was just all Indian bodied people, and I asked my friend who was in the ashram. I said, like, you know, that kind of doubt comes into people's mind that, oh, this is just a Indian thing, it's just, you know. But so he just explained to me, like, For people born in India, then the temple is kind of the same as the church, that they come once a week on a Sunday. But, you know, Krishna consciousness is more than that. And so it's good to have an environment that's suitable where people can learn about Krishna consciousness. According to their, you know, material upbringing and conditioning. It's definitely, as you know, this is Maharaj says is that such yoga centers and so on, reducing the cultural barriers, so people might have no problem with like the philosophy and things, but might just be some of the cultural barriers that stop them from, you know, jumping more into Krishna consciousness. They're like, they don't want to immediately wear tilak or something, or they don't want
to inhibitions.
Sorry, who?
People have inhibitions.
Some obstacles, like, you know. They don't want to immediately wear dhoti and so on. So, you know, at such centers you don't have to focus on those things. Just focus on the, you know, the philosophy and the understanding of spiritual understanding, and then, you know, and chanting kirtan, and then let's focus on like the externals kind of thing.
Because with yoga, the people are now considered it has come from India. We are more as a universal now, rather than just a cultural kind of thing like yoga
is everywhere now, but
so
it's,
that's why it's easy to incorporate them to yoga class and yoga
class. That makes it, it's widely accepted. Yoga, I mean, it's not the right form of yoga, it's just physical, but at least it's a kind of an entry point that we can kind of, you know, come to a yoga class. And, you know, most of the centers that Maharaj runs overseas, then most of the people, they just come to the class and nothing else, but still they have prasadam. But you're kind of looking out for those few people that want to know the deeper side of yoga, what more there is to yoga, or just by associating with devotees, they might become inquisitive and Yeah, but even for a lot of people that go to the yoga classes at our centers, and they'll just go to the class and for many, many years and just have prasadam, and that's kind of fine. That's, you know, they're still getting benefit, and yeah. So yeah, yoga is an entry point.
How about kirtans?
Yeah, kirtans speak as well. Kirtans.
In a new place,
you
don't know much.
Like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's like it's a musical thing. Kirtans, people appreciate music. And yeah, you can say this. It's like a form of music, of call and response. And, you know, it's a very soothing thing. People are kind of so stressed out, so they find kirtan very soothing, and then you can make a kirtan that's more upbeat as well. People can dance, and yeah. And in the kind of yoga community, there's a lot of people also doing kirtan, but you know, they're not devotees, so it doesn't have the potency. Yeah. So all these things started, you know, originated with the Hare Krishna movement. Now they're spread out into the wider community. Yeah, vegetarianism, all these things, they originated with the Hare Krishna movement when Prabhupada went to the West, and no one else could really propagate them as well as Prabhupada did. So yeah, now they're everywhere in the society. Vegetarianism is big and yoga is massive, but the kind of like materialistic people, they just take that thing and they leave out the Krishna part. So, yeah. Okay, so we'll leave it there and go and try to stream my Bhagavatam Ki.
Hare Krishna.